Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Steve Greenfield, and Steve is going to talk about the media and minor candidates. This is a subject near and dear to your heart because you're running as a Green to Congress in New York 19, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, go ahead.
Just share your thoughts.
Okay. The question is, why do minor party candidates and independent candidates basically have no shot at media coverage as ordinary news? It's the same reason that we have no shot at raising a substantial amount of money. It's because our media is, like everything else, motivated by profit. That's what they're doing. And so if I'm Democratic Party candidate, like just look in my district where I am, forget the nation as a whole, where the numbers obviously grow much, much higher. In the 19th district, in the Democratic Party and Republican Party combined, which included the spending of the individual candidates and then the spending of PACs that support individual candidates, they came to $34 million. And, this is a congressional district. It only represents about 750,000 people. Under a million people in each congressional district. And these two candidates from the two major parties and the parties themselves, the DCCC and the RNCC and the PACs that are supported, they spent $34 million. Now, obviously, an awful lot of that money, just because of the rates that are charged, is television, right? That's the biggest. That's the big ticket, right? And targeted advertising through the internet and stuff like that. Those people are sustaining the business model of the media. If I had $17 million to buy television ads, the TV stations would be happy to cover me, because I'm providing them with vast amounts of revenue. I'm keeping their business operating.
Right.
It's very hard for media to make a profit right now, right? Because especially print media, we hear all about this. Everyone's reading their news online, and so their rates are down, and their advertisers are down, and the printing is expensive. And so campaigns in this country, because of the explosion of spending, and as if we didn't have a problem from the beginning, from the origins of this country, and that only people with enough money to purchase and distribute enough media to get to people's households would be competitive for office. And so we basically, from our origins as a nation, we had no way to get around that only the people with tremendous amounts of money available were able to reach the voters, and as a result, only people with extremely, concrete class interests in support of concentrated wealth were ever able to get top government positions. That's how it's been since the beginning. And whereas in other countries that also generally serve the interests of vast wealth, they've at least, in the interest of democracy, tempered some of the profit motive by doing something such as shortening the campaign season, actually having a campaign season, right, that lasts 90 days. They just say, no TV commercials until it's 90 days. And we actually have similar things like that in this country, although, here we complain, well, wait, we can't do that. We have freedom of speech. If people want to run a commercial 2 years before the election, we can't stop them, right? It means we have this impression that we are somehow legally incapable of constraining spending and time and all kinds of things like that that maintain the advantages of wealth in our electoral system. But we actually do have some things on a very small scale. For example, we all know that you can't put your signs out on the sides of the roads, right? Within some, it varies from county to county, but within some period of time, right? In my county, it's 30 days. In other counties, it might be as long as 3 months. And we also know that as soon as the election's over, you got to get right out there and clean up your signs. You got to drive all over, your district and pick them right up. You can't just leave them there, right? So we do have some very entry-level practical constraints with the signs. It's really about, keeping the highways attractive. We don't want signs year-round going on. But, we have a big, big problem. If I have an opponent in my race that's buying, $1 million worth of television ads, then you'd better believe that every time that candidate holds a press conference, those TV stations are going to be there, ready, before the press conference starts with all their cameras perfectly positioned, because if they give, good coverage to the candidate, then the candidate's going to feed that right back to them by saying, well, here's a place where I need to put my dollars because they're giving me good coverage. And so I'm going to boost that. This is an advertising technique, where they have what's called multiple penetrations, right? If you want to get a message to somebody, it has to come three times in three different forms, And so if they're buying an ad in the newspaper or on a television station, they're also going to hit your mailbox with a postcard that day. They time it very precisely to make sure that you get three different sources of input on whatever it is they're trying to do that day. And that's just, that's not designed to be evil, right? I mean, that's just a very practical and pragmatic thing. If you're doing advertising and you want your message to get out, then you're going to talk to advertising consultants who do the research or who at least subscribe to the trade magazines that give them access to the research about what it is you have to do. Surveys show that the person remembers the message most when it happens three times, on the same day, three different input sources. And so if you have enough money, you're going to be able to make that happen. And if you don't have enough money, you can't. And getting back and tying it together with why the media doesn't just cover minor party candidates as if they're news, and at least let that be something by which people have equal access. Again, it goes back to what I said at the start here. It's about, how is your bread buttered, right? I mean, does covering my campaign help keep the Kingston Freeman or Time Warner Channel 6 in business? Do they generate revenue and advertisers if they're covering Steve Greenfield? And more specifically, am I giving Time Warner $500,000? Am I just taking $500,000 of my donor money and turning it into a revenue stream? I shouldn't call it Time Warner, right? Their name is Spectrum now. Okay, so I don't want it to seem like,
right,
oh, he shouldn't be running for office. He doesn't even know the name of the company. Okay, I know the name of the company, right? It's the same company. They changed their name. Okay, so I'm not giving $1 million to Spectrum. And so a Spectrum television crew, right? You have to have a reporter. You have to have a camera operator. Someone's driving the car. Maybe if it's a more higher finance campaign, the station's coming out with one of those vans with the satellite thing that goes up, the antenna that comes up out of, that's pretty darn expensive. That's expensive. That's a $100,000 van. That's a reporter that's getting paid whatever the reporter gets paid, even if it's a small scale operation, 50, 60 grand a year, the camera operator is a union member because that's a technical skill. So that person's getting paid, 50, 60 grand a year. It's expensive to send that camera crew out there and cover the event. And so, if I'm paying Spectrum $500,000 in advertising, which costs them nothing, right? I paid to make the ad. I hired the camera crew in the studio. I made the ad. That cost them nothing. So if I have $500,000 and give that to Spectrum, I'm basically paying the cost of what it costs them to send people to cover my campaign. In fact, if I'm spending enough, like a $34 million campaign season that happened in the 19th District 2 years ago, They're making a profit covering the Democrat and the Republican. They're making a huge profit by covering them.
Spent in 2018 in the 19th district?
$34 million. It was ranked as one of the most expensive congressional campaigns anywhere in the country. I think it was like the sixth most expensive campaign in history in congressional districts. You know, this happened because of the infamous Red to Blue campaign, right? My district was considered potentially flippable from Republican to Democrat, and the Republicans were obviously telegraphed that the Democrats would be spending at an extremely high level here early, because the Democrats, of course, announced, you know, which districts the pollsters seemed to indicate could be flipped. And so the Republicans were prepared at their end to defend the district. You know, the Dems outspent them a little bit, but basically this was a $30+ million district. And so it was a bonanza, a business bonanza for the local media here in this district, spending on them, the likes of which they had never seen before. And so given that that was the case, why exactly would any business interested in its revenue stream say, all right, I'm going to go cover this candidate who seems to have better ideas? When he was at a Chamber of Commerce debate, he got the most applause on every single question. Mm-hmm. Let's go see what he's about. Let's go see why would the media do that? My campaign ran on $3,000 2 years ago. You know, I took out, you know, three ads on small local radio stations. So why would they do that? Why would someone sit down and do a thoroughgoing coverage of my ideas, my qualifications, my challenges to the notions that were being presented by the major parties to explain that they were presenting non-workable policies? And it's kind of phenomenal because right here we are 2 years later, and we're certainly surrounded by all the evidence that both parties were presenting non-workable policies. It's all come to pass. But here I am again in the exact same situation, right? I cannot finance the private media to cover me, whereas the other two candidates are going to be able to finance their own coverage. If there were a way that I could show the local private media that they could make a profit by covering me, then I could be covered. But so this is this closed loop, right? As long as I can't raise $1 million.
Let me ask you this question. When Trump ran the first time and he was elected, he got a ton of free coverage because of the ratings. The TV stations felt that by covering him, their ratings would go up. Why can't you, as a congressional candidate in a minor party, do something where you can boost the ratings of the local media in Newport and get the coverage comparable to what Trump got 4 years ago?
Well, there's a couple of reasons that put constraints on that as well, and those are also tied directly to how much money you have. I mean, so the first thing that we've got is that we've got, before he even announced for president, Donald Trump was established as a celebrity, right? He'd been running that TV show on NBC, Celebrity Apprentice, for quite some time, and his appeal that turned him from a kind of an annoying rich kid in New York City, where I grew up, and he was always this loudmouth, self-aggrandizing, racist figure, because he was able to use his money to buy full-page ads in the newspapers and TV anytime he wanted, and he was a socialite, you know, so he was always covered in the gossip pages with his wife and his scarlet mistress and everything. But so Donald Trump comes into this process as a pre-existing celebrity. And what is it that he is specifically known for, right? He's known for being a jerk. He's the public's favorite jerk, you know? And so he comes in with two things already to his advantage. First of all, he's already a television celebrity. He's already a ratings generator that's making tons of money for the network because of his outlandish and outrageous presentation, right? And so because he's a celebrity, he starts with these rallies, you know, in stadiums, and people come out cheering him the way you would turn out for a rock music tour that's coming through your town, because it was fun and it was exciting. And so that was a ratings generator in and of itself. But bear in mind, he was also at the same time, even though he wasn't spending quite at the level of Hillary Clinton, he was spending. He was spending money. He was buying ads. I wouldn't need the $14 million that Antonio Delgado and his PACs generated to get myself in the news. You know, I could get myself in the news if I had, you know, 1 million. You know, you don't need the whole 15 million to get into the news. You just need enough. You just need enough that they're not losing money covering you. So Trump had those two things, right? He had a pre-existing cult following and celebrity status, and he also was able to couple that with at least a reasonable amount of money buying right into the system. And so in order to match that, I mean, first of all, I could never match it, but in order to approach that system of could you do something to get media attention, and this is something that a lot of minor candidates, party candidates and independent candidates do, and I don't want to do this particular thing, do something outrageous, right? Do something that's just so wacky that the media is going to cover it as like a human interest story, right? I've seen minor party candidates, dress in gorilla suits and go to events and attract the cameras that way. I've seen, you know, them go, I'm going to go to a pot legalization rally and I'm going to smoke pot. I'm going to, whatever. Like, you know, we do get that sense that if we do something outrageous, that will be covered because of that. But then that's a trap in and of itself, because if they come down to cover me because I'm doing something outrageous, then my ideas are still not going to reach voters, right? It's just going to be like, oh, look at that guy. He's riding a unicycle across a cornfield, you know, right? Like, I could probably learn how to ride a unicycle and ride it through a cornfield, you know, and I could probably get on television, right? But then all you know about me is that I did something wacky, and that's got nothing to do with being a candidate for office. You could get on television doing something wacky, you know, any day, you know.
We're in the 2020 cycle right now, and Howie is running at the top of the ticket on the Green Party line. You know, I see nothing on the news. I see nothing on the internet. And the positions are really solid. And who is, you know, the American people super for it, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing. Let's get to the national level now, right? Because it's a much bigger picture once you get to the national level. Nationally, just on the office of president, the Democrats and the Republicans are going to spend about $1 billion this year. We as ordinary people can't even wrap our heads around something like that, right? They're actually going to spend a lot more than $1 billion. A leading presidential campaign over a primary cycle and a general election cycle is somewhere in the neighborhood of $400 million, $500 million. Every 4 years. There's two of them, but that's before you get to the PACs and the super PACs and the spending. In reality, you're probably talking about $1.5 billion maybe $2 billion just on the top of the ticket. And at the same time, since presidential elections happen every 4 years, you've also got all 435 House districts up, and depending on the year, either 33 or 34 Senate seats. So you've got 470 seats, you know, figure $10 million on each of those seats, you know, if you figure an average of $5 million per candidate, two major party candidates, let's call that $10 million a seat. There's 470 of those seats being run on, so that's another $4.7 billion right there. On top of the $2 billion that's being – talking about $6 billion, $7 billion being spent, you know, in the media. Overwhelmingly, that money is being spent on media. And so at this point, with the media having enough trouble attracting eyeballs and attracting revenues for their advertising, we're at a stage where our media is being kept in business by the two major political parties. If we changed to a British system, right, where we had a three-month campaign system, where we just said, sorry, you can't run ads, it's too critical for democracy, that we don't run ads, that we don't have a two-year election cycle, right? Because that's what we have here, right? Everybody who's competitive in a primary, they have to announce that they're running a full year before the primary begins, right? They all announced in the Democratic primary in February, March, April, you know, of 2019, that they're going to be running for president in, you know, November of 2020. That's where it is now. That's just how it is. If we were to put a hard limit on that, just for the interest of democracy, to say that we, you know, yes, we have free speech, but democracy also needs to be addressed, and so we're going to be tempering some of the excesses, then all of, at this point, all of our television and print media would literally go out of business. You're talking about giving an industry $7 billion every 2 years. So, you know, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And, you know, without any systems of alternative media, and any system by which a minor party candidate, when you're running on a major party line, then you access that party's institutional donors, right? We all know that every member of Congress is supposed to raise, you know, $750,000 a year for their own party's congressional campaign fund, like the DCCC, right? They have to spend a good part of every day. Obviously, they don't know the people they're calling. People on their staff hand them a list. They go into their office and they dial for dollars all day long. The total strangers that are names that the party has provided to them as people that donate all the time, and so they want you to work them because it makes people feel good to have an actual member of Congress calling them on the phone. So they have these established institutional donor circles that do not change, and those same donor circles are all also drawn upon to pay the bills at the the AstroTurf nonprofits, the things like Citizen Action, you know, and all the different Sunrise, all the groups that are presented as being the advocates of various issues, but they only support either one party or the other. So they're getting their income from the same sources. And it all goes back to the same thing, right, which is that we have an enormous amount of surplus revenue in this country beyond what we need for our physical sustenance. And we concentrate all that surplus in the hands of a few people who then have the ability to distribute it any way they see fit that supports the continuance and expansion of their own interests. So we're right back where we were when we started with the founders of this country, who actually wrote laws, you know, restricting the vote to property owners. You know, the system of how we protect the not being able to challenge the forces of vast wealth when it comes to our elections, those things change over time as the means by which we generate wealth change over time. At the founding of this country, wealth was generated by just one thing, which was land, right? You would have a vast amount of land and you'd rent it out to tenant farmers, you know, or if somebody was going to build a small foundry or a factory or an iron ore mine or a gold mine, right? Hey, at the founding of this country, everything that could be productive and generate revenue was determined by the ownership of property. So in the early stages of our country, our voting system was tied to property, right? Simple. And then, you know, as capitalism evolved, the different ways that revenue gets generated changed. And as the ways that revenue get generated changed, we continue to tinker with and change the way campaign finance works and campaign season and all these different things. But that was done to make sure that the systems of great wealth being able to control voting outcomes remained current with the times and how they. And so this brings us up to today, right? I guess it really caught on after television became popular. Televised debates and television ads. And so now we're at the stage, like we saw this year, and I don't know, you know, I didn't watch any of them, the Democratic debates, because it really looked like with all the special effects and everything, right? I mean, you must have watched a couple of them. Didn't they look like American Idol? Right? Didn't it look like you were watching an episode of American Idol? Each candidate would walk in, the lights would flash, and music would play, and it was all very, you know, time regulated, same questions at every single one. They wouldn't do an issue debate. It was the exact same questions at every single debate. It was all about the flashy graphics and the lights and then they would actually cut to commercial, right? This is also a brand new thing, right? We didn't even used to do that. You'd sit there and watch a debate. Now you watch a debate and every 10 minutes, just like a reality show, they cut to commercial. So of course, that's why the Democratic Party this year actually set rules about access to the debates that had to do with how much money you were raising, right? We've finally seen this come to its end game right now. People were able to declare as candidates, but if they didn't raise a certain amount of money from a certain number of donors, the DNC would not let them on the stage. And the reason that was the case was because they wanted you to prove that you could generate consumer revenue. That's why it was tied more to the number of donors, right? It could be small donations. They wanted you to prove that you had ratings, that your supporters were going to turn on the TV and watch the show, because every 10 minutes that show was going to cut the commercial and the advertiser was paying for the debate, was paying a profit to the television station for that debate. So you had to prove that you had ratings. That's what Donald Trump did, right? He had to prove you had ratings. You'd make a profit for the network. So in order to gain access to the debates, now for the first time in history, we actually had to prove that we could get ratings before they would even let you to the podium.
But let's say Kirsten Gillibrand, she had her son do commercials on Facebook. Oh, give a dollar to my mom. She wants to be in the next debate. I mean, is that really terrific? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. Of course, they all did that. Because like I said, the issue to get into debates was not how much money you'd raised, but from how many people you'd raised it from. So they all just wanted a dollar. Because, like I said, the goal was to demonstrate to the network so that the DNC could tell each network, here's the ratings you're going to get tonight. It's like the Super Bowl. They wanted to be able to tell the network in advance, here's the kind of ratings you can expect, and our lower-rated faces are not going to be on the stage. That's how we're maximizing ratings for your network. So that's what it comes down to with the money, right? We're maximizing revenue, ratings, and revenue to the networks. And it's never about who has the best ideas and the right of the American public to hear those ideas so that they can be informed and make an election decision. It's all about who's giving the most money to the media so that, you know, the media will project them into the living rooms to the public to be seen. And that, of course, feeds on itself, right? Because the people that become household names are the people that people have heard of. And then when the pollsters call them on the phone and say, which of the following candidates have you heard of? They tend to have heard of the ones that are on the media the most, obviously.
Right.
The system ends up perfectly closed like that.
And on that note, we have to close, and I'm sure this conversation, you know, will be ongoing as the campaign goes on. So in like 30 seconds, give yourself a little plug while you're running and where.
Okay, come to SteveGreenfieldForCongress.com and take a look, and especially, you know, for what we're talking about today, click on that donate button and get in there and please help, you know, so that I can actually try to crack into this system and get out there. What am I running on? I'm running on the things that we're seeing all around us that are falling apart. I'm running on healthcare. I'm running on climate change. I'm running on war, you know, ending war. I'm running on the needs of you know, ordinary working people and the environment that we need and our food supply and things like that. And you know, that's what we need to be doing right now, as I'm sure everyone can see. So please come, SteveGreenfieldForCongress.com. Send me an email at greenfieldforcongress@gmail.com. I reply personally to all questions. Everyone, please do what you can. This system is very hard to crack, and it is going to take some money. That's what we're discussing.
I invite Antonio Delgado come on and talk about his campaign, and also the two Republicans who are in the primary in New York 19. Come on and talk about that different campaign. We will further this conversation later. Thank you for being on All Exits Closed, and thank you everybody for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you.